When we start the book of Shemot, there's always a bit of tension, and that is, and what I'm about to say is not necessarily mutually exclusive. To what extent are we dealing with a completely new book? Which means anything beforehand is something which doesn't necessarily interest us. To what extent we see this as simply a continuation of wherever it was that we had left off, and to what extent we see the second book, Shemot, as a comparison to the first book, which then would take us not necessarily to the end of the previous book, but perhaps to the beginning of the previous book. And as I said a moment ago, I don't think that these approaches are mutually exclusive. I think that all of them have merit. Of course, to say, okay, make up your mind, is it a new book or not a new book? Well, of course it's a new book, but the question is which emphasis to have when we look at it. Let's begin. We skip the first couple of verses, Eilishmot, and give us the names of the tribes. V'yomat Yosef v'chol echa v'chol dorahu. So that does point to the end of the last book, because the way that we ended the last book was with Yosef's death. Yosef dies twice. I guess they really didn't like him, so they made sure to kill him off in Bereshit and kill him off again in Shemot. Uvnei Yisrael peru v'yishritzu v'yirbu v'yatzmu b'mod ma'od. V'tmalei aretz otam. So again, when you read that verse, so you pause and say, okay, so is that something I should be contrasting to the very beginning of Bereshit, where the commandment of peruvu is introduced, or perhaps that's something which is picking up a theme at the end of the book, so of last book, and hold on for a moment, we'll come right back to that. V'yakam melech hadash ha-mitzrayim asher lo yada et Yosef. And a new king emerges in Egypt who does not know Yosef. So one thing that you do notice, at least the way that I concentrated on these three verses, Yosef is mentioned in Vav, and Yosef is mentioned in Chet, and the truth is that Yosef is also perhaps referenced in Zayin as well. We'll have to see how hard we have to work in order to notice this. So as much as I would say, well, it's a new book and a new beginning, and let's just start all over again, the Chumash doesn't really let us do that. And once again, part of this is Yosef. But if I'll see or ask, so how exactly does the Peruvu, how exactly... So if we recall when Yaakov was told to go down to Egypt, one of the things that God says to him right away, and you're going to become very numerous over here. So this idea of Peruvu is mentioned in terms of going down to Egypt. That was also mentioned all the way back by the Brit Ben Abtirim, as we saw a couple of weeks ago. But there's another element to this which I think we don't necessarily pay attention to. Look at source number 12, but one second, before we get there, maybe there's one more thing I want to look at first, and then we'll come to 12. Sorry, let's continue in source number 1, and then we'll move down. Well, that's part of the anti-Semitism. Pasuk Tet, this new king, this new paro, who doesn't know Yosef, and if we do pause there for a moment, isn't not knowing Yosef an absolute absurdity? How is it possible that somebody doesn't know Yosef? I mean, what Yosef did for the country, what Yosef did for the economy, just how is that even possible? So we'll entertain a couple of possibilities in a moment. V'yomer lamo, hine am b'nei Yisrael rav v'atzum mimenu. The Jews are more numerous than us, so we do have to wonder if that's really the case or if that's hyperbole. Anti-Semites tend to be guilty of hyperbole. As we've mentioned many times, the old, either it's a joke or not a joke, that if you ever get depressed, then look at anti-Semitic literature, because it says we control everything, right? You look at the Jewish newspapers, everything is terrible. You look at the non-Jewish newspapers, we control the banks, we control Hollywood, we control everything. We're all over the place, so it's much more optimistic. So over here, we already find one of these anti-Semitic comments. Havan nitchakma lo. Now, the word nitchakma is also interesting, and I would ask you off the top of your heads, how many times has the word chacham or chachma, wisdom, been used in the whole Torah till this point? You don't have to give me an answer. But not all that many. We'll see where in which context. Hava nitchakma lo, pen yurbe, perhaps they increase even more. Vayotik rena milchama, and if there will be a case of war, v'nosaf gam hu al sonenu, v'nilcham banu v'alam in ha'aretz. Now, if the whole fear over here Let's go back. There's a couple steps of the fear. One step of the fear is the Jews can't be trusted. They're not really part of us. They're not really good citizens. No matter what they've contributed to the economy or anything else, this makes no difference because we fundamentally cannot trust them. Why? Because if there's any kind of an attack, then they're going to side with the other side. Now, why would they side with the other side? And then it tells you, because then they would leave. So if the whole fear is they're going to leave, so what's the problem? So let them leave. So just because there is perhaps an irrational circle of comments going on, it just doesn't really work. It doesn't make a difference. That's part of what anti-Semitism has always been. It doesn't have to always make sense. There can be mutually exclusive claims against us, right? We're the socialists and we're the capitalists. We can keep on going. We're guilty of every single sin, and therefore, of course, you can make claims like this. Although this is not simple, and some of the commentaries work very hard to try to reinterpret this. That maybe they're afraid that they're going to chase us out of the land and to try to twist or finesse the words a little bit. But at face value, this is really quite strange. V'yasimu alav sarei misim laman anoto b'sivlatam, and they do things to torture them, lanototam, in order to torture them, to abuse them. V'yivan ori miskanot l'paro et pitom v'dramses, and the Jews, and of course we have to question, and all of us were brought up with some of the midrashim of how they volunteered for a lot of the service, because Jews are always good citizens, want to be the best citizens, and therefore, yes, there's national service, of course we'll do this, but soon enough we find ourselves in slavery. V'kasher yanu oto, kin yirbeh v'chein yifrotz, and therefore, even though that there was perhaps a thought or a plot on the side of this new king, that we will abuse him and that will stop the tide of their becoming more multiple, it didn't work. V'yakutsu b'nei Yisrael, and they were disgusted with b'nei Yisrael. Now, this is also not the first time that we find that. If we go towards the end of Bereishit, we found a number of situations. Every time we eat bread, they get disgusted by us. So there was, the term used was ivrim. Over here, it's v'yakutsu b'nei Yisrael. But it's not that they loved us ever. We made them money, but they didn't necessarily love us. Vayavidu Mitzrayim b'nei Yisrael b'farach. So we have stages there. We have the Inu Otam, and here Vayavidu Otam, and then finally b'farach. We were enslaved, and this was something which was incredibly hard work. Vayimaru et chayehim, and they made their lives bitter. So one step further, b'avodah kasha, b'chomu levenim, b'chol avodah b'sadeh. So, should we go a little bit further? Pasuk Tedva, Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Limladot Ivriot Sheshem Achad Shifra Veshem Hasheni Pu'ah, Vayomer Bialdechen Et Ivriot Re'item Et Avanim Im Benhu Vahamitem Otov Im Bati V'chaya. So finally we get now closer to our final solution, and that is, if you kill all the males, then they will stop being Jews, they'll stop being Bnei Yisrael, and then we can just take over all of their women. I think this is what they would call a win-win situation. But Yudzayin Vatir Ena Miladot Elokim. But they had fear of God. V'lo Asuk Asher Diber Lei Melech Mitzrayim V'techiyen Et Eladim. So let's pause there. And again, it tells us in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, V'yikiru Amiladot Et Elokim V'yasdam Batim. That they again they feared God. That's what we find now. As a result of all this, Paro comes up with Plan B. Kaf Bet V'yitzav Paro L'kol Amo Leimor. This is La'amo. Okay, if they're not going to kill them on the spot, then at least throw them in the river. Now, I said, let's take a look for a moment at source number 12. So, last week, we tried to convince ourselves that Yaakov gave brachot to all of the tribes. So we know that that's not really the case. He didn't really give a bracha to Reuven, and he didn't really give a bracha to Shimon or to Levi. Yehuda gets something nice, and but the main recipient of the brachot in Parshat Vayechi was Yosef and his family, Yosef and his children. Yosef receives various brachot, his children receive various brachot. So if you look at 12, which is the bracha of Yosef, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin, Benot Tzada Alei Shur. Vayimoruhu, did you notice that word being used in the beginning of Shemot? If you didn't, it was in Pasuk Yudalet. Vayimoru, they made life bitter. Oh, whose life was made bitter? Yosef's life was made bitter. Virobu, V'istimu balei chitzim, and people tried to kill him. What I'm going to claim is, and this is going to be very obvious, or at least I hope it's very obvious, that the story of the Jews in Egypt, to a certain extent, we can decide how much, we already read this story. It's not a new story, it's an old story. Of course, anti-Semitism is always an old story, It has to start someplace. But there are going to be many, many themes that will lead us to the conclusion that the story of Yosef is actually a microcosm of the story of what happens over the Jews. Notice another thing. Pasukav Dalid. Vatashev Be'etan Kashto V'yafuz Azor Yadav. Maybe next year I'll speak about that pasuk. That pasuk is very interesting, but we're going to ignore it now. Me'elavicha V'yazraka Ve'et Shaddai. Now the name Shaddai is used 5 times in Bereishit, 1 time in Shmot, and never again in the rest of Chumash. You can count up if you like. 3 of the 5 times in Bereishit, it's focused on Yosef, or at least the Ben Rachel, but it moves in that direction. Most of the use of the name is towards Yosef. The last time it'll be used will be the beginning of next week's Parsha, when God says to Moshe that I appear to the Avot, Bekel Shakai, but Shem Hashem lo nadati lehem. Over here is the last time it's going to be used in Bereishit. Ve'et Shaddai, the first time it's used, if you remember, the first time it's used is when Avram is given the commandment of Brit Milah. The name Shaddai is always related, and even if it's not obvious what I'm saying now, it's true anyway. And if it doesn't make sense, you'll have to go and figure it out, because it's true. The name Shaddai is always related to fertility. Fertility. It's always related to fertility. The name Shaddai is suspiciously similar to breasts. Shaddaim, Shaddai, Shad. And if you read the rest of that verse, you almost can't miss it, unless you missed it last week. And that is, Ve'etz Shaddai, V'yivarechecha, Brichot Shamayim Me'al, Brichot Toham, Rovetz Atachat, Brichot Shaddaim V'racham. I mean, I know you went to yeshiva and they skip all of these things, but how obvious can that possibly be? So this idea of fertility was specifically the bracha which was given to Yosef. And as I said, then we begin to read this week's parasha. Oh, all the Jews, they multiplied and so on. So on the one hand, that takes us back to the beginning of Bereishit. On the other hand, it takes us back to the end of Bereishit. End of Bereishit, starting with, if you want, the middle, the Brit Ben Abtirim, continuing with when Yaakov is told that now it's going to happen, but specifically Yaakov gives this bracha over to Yosef. And he says as much. The brachot which I received from my father and my grandfather is really what I'm giving to Yosef. So in the same sense that Yitzchak gives the Birchot Avraham to Yaakov, Yaakov gives the Birchot Avraham to Yosef, and including in the Birchot Avraham, and those were two sides of the same coin. What you didn't notice at the time was Brit Milah was a part of it. Was to get the Bracha of Eretz Yisrael went with Brit Milah, but this name was used. The name was used in terms of Brit Milah, and only then when he's 99 years old and he does the Brit Milah, only then can he have a child. And that's why I'm going to say it again. That if it's not obvious what I'm saying, you just have to work a little harder and you'll see that it's really there. But the name Shaddai is connected to fertility, but no place as obvious as this over here. So if we go back and now, I'm not going to give you any promises, but I know that you all figured that after I spoke about Yosef the last 4 weeks or so, I was going to stop this week. So no, but maybe by next week I'll stop. Maybe no guarantees. You know, which part of the sentence it is that you will be blessed by God and you'll be blessed blessings of heaven and earth and blessings from the heavens into the very depths of earth and blessings of the breasts and the womb. So the blessings. That's, I'm going to say it again. This is a blessing of fertility, and the fact that that name Shaddai is used over here is not a coincidence. That is certainly the case. So if we now start again, and we're going to look through things through our eyes of Yosef. Well, the first thing which is completely bizarre is that our new paro does not know Yosef. So let's start at source number 2. A couple of different midrashim are included there. Rabbanan Amre, the rabbi said, Lama karu melech chadash? Why is he called a new king? Velo paro atzmo haya? Isn't he the same king? So I guess this midrash is dealing with the theory of conservation of pharaohs. We had an old pharaoh, this new pharaoh must be the old pharaoh. Even though it's interesting, note, what was he not called right at this point? At least initially he's not called paro, he's called Melech Chadash. But I'll leave that. I mean, paro will somehow be back. V'lo paro atzmo haya, elish amru amitzrim leparo. And this is also, I wonder how much in history things like this really happened. The Egyptians said to paro, bo v'nizdaveg le'umazu. Come, let's marry into that nation. Let's merge together with them. This would be reminiscent of the people of Shechem, right? Let's go, we'll become one nation. They're here, they're good, they're nice people. I mean, one of the problems with intermarriage in America is that a lot of people will tell their children that Jewish men, they won't get drunk, they won't beat you, and they make good livings. So go marry a nice Jewish guy. If you want excitement, date someone who's not Jewish, but if you want to get married, marry a Jewish guy. So l'cham, let's marry with these people. Amr lahim, Paro, who's a little bit more sophisticated, went to finer boarding schools. I said, are you out of your mind? Amr lahim, shotim atem. You guys are crazy. Adach shav nishalahem ano ochlim, v'hechnis daveg lahim. Ilula Yosef lo yinu chayim. Had there not been Yosef, he wouldn't be alive. Kevin shalosh shema lahim, horidu mikis o shlosha chadoshim. So they removed him. Ad shamar lahim, kol ma shetem rotzim hareini imachem. That I will essentially listen to anything that you have to say. Vishivoto, and then they returned him. Lafich chetuv v'yakam melech hadash. Troubled with the language, v'yakam melech hadash. We'll see in a moment or two what Rav Hirsch says about this. Rabbanan, it sounds contradictory. Correct. Rabbanan patchin pitcha lahaikra. The rabbis, when they spoke about this topic, they introduced it with the following verse. Bahashem bagdu, they rebelled against God. Ki banim zarim yoldu ata yochlem chodesh et chelkehim. L'lamdecha, what did all this come to teach you? It's going to make plain words between chodesh and chadash. That's really why I brought that in. Ki shemet Yosef, when Yosef died, he feiru brit milah. The Jews stopped doing brit milah. Now, just in case you say, okay, listen, there's a lot of people who are a little bit more worldly and sophisticated and think that brit milah is barbaric, so they were probably very sophisticated in those days as well. It's the only mitzvah they had. This was it. They didn't have any other mitzvah. They didn't have Purim yet, right? They didn't have Hanukkah. They didn't have Pesach. The only thing that they had, again, you can say they kept everything, I'm fine with that. But the only thing they really had was Brit Milah. And if they're saying, let's stop doing Brit Milah, so what are they saying? Amru niyeh kimitzrim. Let's be like the Egyptians. So what we have over here is just describing this situation. Do you all know the famous midrash that says the Jews fell to the 49th level of Tumah? So there's no such midrash. Sorry. It is found in some Kabbalistic sources. It's found in the Zohar Chadash. It does say this. This teaching, but if they stayed one more moment, they would have slipped to the 50th? There's no such source that says that. Even the Beit HaLevi, when he quoted it, he goes, I've seen people say it. I don't know where it comes from. There's actually a huge machloket among the Kabbalists if there even is a 50th level of Tumah. According to the Vilna Gaon, the Ramchal, the Arizal, there is no 50th level of Tumah. Doesn't necessarily mean that they couldn't have slipped there. I don't want to be overly Kabbalistic or complicated, but let me tell you another teaching of the Zohar. The Zohar says you're not allowed to worship foreign gods. Actually, the Torah said you can't, right? Elohim Achirim. But the Zohar says, why can't you worship foreign gods? So the Zohar says, because they don't exist. So if you worship something, you're clinging to it. So if you cling to a foreign god, you're clinging to non-existence. If you cling to non-existence, what happens? You cease to exist. So therefore, you can't worship something which doesn't exist. It's possible that the 50th level of Tumah is the same thing. It doesn't exist. So if you fall to the 50th level of Tumah, which doesn't exist, so then you get to total non-existence. So that's a possible way of reconciling it, but based upon the Kabbalistic sources even. The Or HaChaim in this week's Parsha will tell us that if they stayed one moment longer, they would have fell to the 50th level. A lot of Hasidic sources write it, and everyone just assumes it must say so clearly in the Gemara, the Midrash, or something. So as I said, the 49th level is itself hard to find. That's in the Zohar Chadash. But to fall to the 50th level is not found in any older sources. But when it says that they decided in the Midrash, let's stop doing Brit Milah, so just realize that's the same thing. It's the same thing as, what does it mean? That the one mitzvah they have, they're not going to keep. And we also will strongly suspect that in terms of this whole world of mythology, that's one of the things we've seen in previous years, the amount of gods in Egypt, I can't keep track, right? There are so many gods in Egypt. I mean, it's almost an unlimited amount of gods that they had and things that they believed in, forces and powers and so on. I remember when I first started doing this, was trying to compare the Makot and understand them in terms of the mythology. And what I found, it was the easiest thing in the world because you could find a god for anything in Egypt. It was too easy. It was an uncontrolled experiment because you could find a god to fit into any kind of thing that you wanted to fit into. That's how they lived. So the major gods, the sun god and the Pharaoh's god of Nile, okay, there were more major gods, but there are lots of minor gods as well. So when they say, let's stop doing Brit Milah, that is a major statement, and that itself could be an indication of falling, you know, maybe the Zohar, when it says the 49th level, maybe that's exactly what it means. But over here, it continues a couple lines later, Melech Hadash, Amad V'chideh Shalem Zerotav, Asher Lo Yadat Yosef, Yechilo Yamakir Et Yosef. So again, it finds it as preposterous as we did. Amar Yavin, Mashal Echad Sheragam Ovo Shel HaMelech, Amar Melech Hatizot Rosho, That's a real, without explaining the whole thing, later on we are going to find this, that the same Paro who doesn't remember Yosef, although it doesn't say doesn't remember, let's say lo zacharet Yosef, lo yadat Yosef. Later on he'll say, when Moshe comes and says, God said, let my people go, and he'll say, right, I don't know who this God is of yours. Well, maybe later we'll see the exact verse. So the amnesia of Paro seems to affect his knowledge of God and his knowledge of Yosef. And that's exactly what this Midrash, I think, is very correctly pointing out, that there may be an ideology to this, to what he remembers and what he doesn't remember, what he knows and what he doesn't know, or what he chooses to recognize versus what he chooses not to recognize. In source number 3, the Targum Onkelos softens a little bit. V'kam Malka Chadita, right, V'kam Elah Chadash, Al Mitzrayim, de lo mekayim gzeirat Yosef. He just changed the policy of Yosef. So lo yodat Yosef doesn't mean he doesn't remember, doesn't mean he doesn't know, even though those are what the words mean. It means that he chooses not to follow any of the policies that Yosef had made in this country, and therefore this is going to be a whole new chapter. I'm not sure what to do with Targum Yonatan or Suda Yonatan in 4, v'kam malach hadat, kimin shiruya al Mitzrayim, de lo chakim yat Yosef. So the question is what the word chakim means in this pseudo-Targum Yonatan, which of course, just to make you happy, I searched through every time that it's used in the Targum Yonatan, the word chakim, and I don't think that the next line, the Teketer Yonatan, is correct when he just took it right back, asher lo yada. I think chakim goes more to what we would normally call chakam. He doesn't appreciate the wisdom of Yosef. De lo yadat Yosef, which is very close then, which is then very close to the previous comment, he doesn't appreciate what Yosef did, he doesn't appreciate Yosef's wisdom, Yosef is no longer somebody who is, maybe his picture is no longer on the pantheon of the Egyptian gods or pharaohs, as it were. Rashi famously brings the two interpretations from the Gemara, V'yokim elach hadash, Rav u'Shmuel, chadam hadash mamash, v'chadam ashi nitchadshu gzerotav, which is the same tension that we've seen. Is this really a new paro, which is difficult, or is it somebody who just changes the policy? To say that it's new paro, incidentally, is very easy to say. Why? Because life has gone on. If you're going to say that the whole old generation died, so what, only Jews die? The Egyptians don't die. I would assume that the new generation applies to both. Ibn Ezra, though, says, V'yakam elach hadash pirusho kimashmo'o below tosafot. It's exactly what it says. Don't add, don't subtract. Shelo ya mizera hamalucha. It's a new paro means a new royal family. That the royal family had been replaced. Which means it's not just a shelo yadat Yosef. It's everything from the old regime is gone. That something happened in Egypt, that there's now a new regime. So that is quite interesting. The Rav Hirsch, who I hinted at earlier, is troubled by the language Vayakam Melech Hadash. And he writes in source number 8, Vayakam Melech Hadash al Milim Eile Bishum Ofen Einu Mitzayanot Chilufei Mishmeret Rigilim V'chukiyim Okeis HaMalchut. Such language, Vayakam, there arose a new king, he claims never is an indication of a nonviolent inheritance from the previous king. He's saying quite the opposite. Kum al mashma'uto tamid hishtaltut alima. He said vayakam will always, they rose up will be an indication of a coup, of a violent takeover. And he says, therefore, nira efokiha shulshelet havatika mugra, the old regime was exiled. Ha'am va'aretz netnu bidei acher, and someone else took over. For shulshelet zara ba'u min hanechar. So what he's describing over here actually has historical basis to it, that Egypt was taken over by a foreign power, and therefore there's simply a new regime here that has no appreciation for anything which happened in the past. And what's nice about Rav Hirsch, instead of just stating this, is he actually sees it in language as well. Upashta al Mitzrayim, l'chein asher lo yadat Yosef. Ilu hayta shelshelet acheret mibnei ha-makom, lo yalem Yosef bilti yadua. Had they been even a local, a takeover from a local group, then Yosef would not have been unknown. But rather, he feels that this is coming from this other place. The Emek Davar, Netziv in 9 is a little softer, and he sees it as there's a lack of love towards Yosef. It's not just appreciation. Karov lefereish milashon ahava, asher lo yada. So if a yada adam et chava ishto, we normally see this with sexual overtones. So the Emek Davar is saying that, but how can you see sexual overtones without emotional connection as well? So therefore he understands that the word vayada doesn't necessarily mean only a physiological act, but he's saying that it indicates an emotional connection as well. And therefore, shelo yadat Yosef, he understands that shelo lo ahavet Yosef. And therefore, it's one of love and appreciation of Yosef. And again, it doesn't really mean that he didn't know Yosef. So the question that comes back then, so what does knowledge mean in the biblical sense? That's exactly the point. The Kli Yakar makes it a little bit more intriguing. Ki lo yada ma shekara li Yosef. Whatever happened to that Yosef, he didn't know. Ki achiv hayu mishtadlim b'kol oz lahavidu levatel chalamotav lo il lehem kol. Okay, back to the dreams again. So we're going to stop. But the brothers do all they can to make Yosef forgotten because they want to diminish Yosef's reputation. Even after he's dead, like they're working to pull his pictures off the wall and whatever. So you have to be a little depressed when you read that. Now, if I were to take this in the simplest way, Ashelo Yodat Yosef, he doesn't know who Yosef is, so that could be because he never knew, or that could be because he forgot. So you'll say, what do you mean he forgot? That makes no sense. How can you possibly forget Yosef? Well, we have others who have forgotten Yosef, which takes us back to Source 11, when in our search for our Yosef theme, Velo Zachar Sarah Mashkim et Yosef. So Yosef is somebody who's easily forgotten, apparently, at least by people who have reason to want to forget him in the royal court. Yosef is forgotten, and sometimes forgotten for political reasons, for other reasons, practical reasons, but Yosef is somebody who's forgotten, and that itself sets up a very interesting parallel. And just to pose the question for a moment, so what exactly is this telling us? What does Paro's forgetting Yosef over here have to do with the Sar HaMashkim's forgetting over there, other than just pausing for a moment and recognizing that there is this parallel? We already saw source number 12 with the bitterness of Yemaruhu, which is found by Yosef, and again with the fertility which comes. But there's another element. We noticed the women. So let's just say something about the women for a second. We know that there were various midrashim that say that the reason that the Jews were saved in Egypt was because of the nashim tzadkaniyot, right? So where exactly do we find these nashim tzadkaniyot? Well, the first ones, we just now found them. They refused to obey to Paro. But why do they refuse to obey to Paro? Because they have Yirat Hashem, Yirat Elohim. So if we'll come right back to them in a moment. But who's the next one who's going to be? The next one is going to be Miriam, who refuses to turn around and walk away. We'll come back to her as well. Who else is what's going to be Moshe's mother, who obviously instills within him some kind of real profound Jewish belief. So right away, when you look in right here in this Parsha Shemot, there's at least four women, again with our theory of conservation of characters, those four become the same two twice, but we have various actions of these women who surround Yosef. There's one other woman who's a hero who you may not recognize, and that, of course, is the daughter of Paro. So now we're up to five daughter of Paro. So now you're up to five or three women whose actions over here are behind the scenes, but they're the ones, if you want to use a phrase which the Gemara uses only once, it's Chalta de Geula. So where exactly is the beginning of the redemption? Where do you see the sparks, the beginning of the redemption? So the various women are involved in it, but the first actions are these women who...
Moshe's wife.
And Moshe's wife as well. So you want to get up to six then. So, but again, that's what's there on the background, and that's what the Chazal identified. Nashim tzadkaniyot, that they're all over the place, and maybe much more so than we've seen in Bereishit. It's also something which is worth noting. Maybe that's the difference. We let men run Bereishit and didn't work out that well, and now women are much more actively involved. Okay, that was your feminist moment for the year. So, okay, who ran Bereishit? You were the women also?
I'm just saying,
okay, there you go. So women ran Bereishit. So women ran Bereishit to the ground also. Okay, starting with Chava going all the way through. Okay, so women messed up Bereishit, and then, but I accept that. So let's now try again. We're also told in very similar language that Yosef also had fear of God. I'm not going to say the language is identical, but it's important. It's verse number 13, where Yosef refuses the advances of Mrs. Potiphar. V'yima'en, he refuses. V'yomer le'ishet Adonav, he says to his master's wife, Hein Adoni lo yada iti ma bebayit v'chol asher yesh lo natan biyadi, he's put me in charge. Einu gadol bebayit ezem imenu v'lo chasach imenu mu'uma, no one is more important in this house than me, and he hasn't held anything back, ki imotach, other than you, basher at ishto, because you're his wife. Echasera hagadol, hagdola hazot, so how can I pay back my master, who has shown so much faith in me? This would be morally wrong. V'chatati lelokim. And he adds in one more statement about this. It's not just wrong in terms of my master. It's also going to be something which is a sin to God. But I have to pause there for a moment. Let's just say that these women, Shifram Pua, Miriam Yocheved, let's just say they know the Yosef story, or let's put it differently. Asher lo yadat Yosef, is that the Jews also lo yadat Yosef? Or is that only Paro asher lo yadat Yosef? I would say quite the opposite is true. I would say these women very much know Yosef. But here's where we need to pause, because Yosef's morality is what led him to being thrown into prison. Which means I can look and say, listen, you have to know when to be from, and you have to know when you have to bend the rules a little bit, that maybe over here this wasn't a good idea by Yosef. I'm not saying that this is right now. I'm just saying what one could say. One looks at the Yosef story and can say that was a profound mistake on his part. Yosef was in charge. He's enslaved. Okay, the whole Jews will be enslaved. So this parallel between, and that's what I'm saying, it's more than just foreshadowing. It's Yosef's enslaved and all the Jews will be enslaved. So Yosef's slavery is the microcosm of the enslavery of the entire people afterwards. But Yosef's redemption may also serve as the sign for the redemption for the entire people. So when we go back and we look at the text, we notice something interesting. Yosef, who stands up for his morality, and he says, no, this would be a sin against God. How is he paid back for this? He's thrown into prison. He's thrown into prison. And then when he's thrown into prison, then what happens? He's forgotten. So, right? Lo zechar Yosef ishkachehu. So one could then have the conclusion that the proper thing then to do is not to follow Yosef. So when we realize that these women are saying, they may get into severe trouble. We all realize this. When Paro tells you, this is what you must do, and you refuse to follow Paro, you can easily be killed for this. You can easily be thrown into prison for this. You can easily suffer just like Yosef suffered for this. But despite knowing, at least the first stage, of what happens to Yosef, they have the Yirat Elokim as well. So what I'm going to point out, even though the words are not exactly the same, there it says that they fear God. Over here it says that Yosef uses slightly different V'chatat Elokim. This would be a sin against God, which therefore means that Yosef has Yirat Elokim. And that's exactly what Yosef is afraid of. If you're looking for the word V'yichakmu, wisdom, wisdom was not introduced to Bereishit until Perek Mem Aleph, where it comes up a number of times. It starts off with Paro's advisors in source 15. V'yikura el kol chartumimim ve'el kol chachameha. That's where the wise are being introduced. Also notice that all the way through this portion, when Yosef comes in, he's saying that God has told you what he's going to do, but the name of God always used in this section is Elohim, which may actually suggest something that maybe we didn't think of. At the burning bush, Moshe keeps asking, so which name should I use? Who should I tell is calling? Who's sending this message? And he finally comes to understanding it's Yudke Vavke, and he like Shem Havaya. Paro never heard that name. He goes, Shem Hashem, right? I don't know who this is. Paro knows all kinds of gods. He never heard this name. Elokim, he has heard many times. And that keeps coming in this section. Et asher Elokim asah higid leParo. That's in Kaf Hei, Kaf Ched. Asher Elokim asah hirelo Paro. Yosef says it again. What Elokim is doing, Paro knows. And then again he says, Ki anachona devar mi'im Elokim, umar Elokim lasoto. V'yitav ha-devar b'nei Paro. And that language is also used in the beginning of Shemot, v'yitav. And Paro then says, Pasuk Lamed Chet, V'yom Paro Levadav, Hanimtzek Kizei Ish Asher Ruach Elokim Bo, using that name of God. V'yom Paro Yosef, Achrei Odia Elokim Otcha, Et Gamzot, Ein Navon V'chacham Kamocha. So, what we have is, Bo Nichakma is introduced. I said it was not introduced in Bereshit until a term being used to the wise men of Egypt who were quickly proven not to be wise men of Egypt, and there was somebody else who was then declared to be the wise man of Egypt, and who's that? And that's Yosef. So I'm just saying that it comes right back again, the words being used, because can you all admit something? You never would have noticed that the word wisdom being used over here, Bon Chakmalo, you wouldn't have noticed that there's anything unusual. But in the first 41 chapters, it's not used. And the only one who's declared in Bereshit to be Chacham is actually Yosef. So now, Lo Zacharet Yosef, Bo Nitchakma Bo, so you can ignore the connections over here, but I'm just saying they're staring at you once you begin to note them. The other thing which is interesting is the continuation, Vayikra Paro Shem Yosef Tzofnat Paneach. So what does that indicate, Tzofnat Paneach? Yosef is the one who reveals what's hidden, the revealing that which is hidden. V'yitein lot osnat bat potifera kohen on lisha. And Yosef marries the daughter of a kohen. Kohen can either mean of religious or of political impact. That either he's a kohen because he is somebody who's wealthy and powerful, or because there's some kind of religious functionality. The commentaries are not sure. Same thing will come up by somebody else who marries a Kohen's daughter, and who will that be? And that will be Moshe, which again is going to be very close to a parallel. If you look at verse 16, V'lo yichla od hitzpinu. So of all words to use, that he can no longer be hidden. So what word is used by Moshe? The word used, of course, is hidden. The same word which was used by Yosef, Tzofnat Paneach. So now Moshe, who's been hidden, is about to become revealed. Those of you who have more Hasidic blood in you, so realize that Moshe is revealed 3 months after he's born. If according to tradition he's born in Zayin Adar, it means that he's then revealed by the holiday of Shavuot, which is 3 months later, which depending on the size of the month is either Rav or Zayin Sivan. So that's when Moshe is revealed. The same thing is going to come up later on. The same thing's going to come later on when Moshe says, oh, well, I really take them out. And God says, yeah, I'll give you a sign that when you take them out, you'll stand at Har Sinai. Right? You'll come and you'll serve God at this mountain. So that's also the 3 months later. So over here, 3 months later, when Moshe's first born, he then is revealed, Tzofnat Paneach, to reveal what's hidden. But just look, because I'm going to say it again, it's staring at you, V'lo yichol od hitzpinu. He can no longer remain hidden, and he's going to now come out. Moving over to source, where should we start? Let's look at, continue in 16. Here we get to his sister. But Tetzav Achatomi Rachok Lidea Maya Aselo. Now that's a really heroic act, and maybe she doesn't get enough credit for that. What is this about his sister? She cannot turn her back and walk away from her brother in distress. Right? And that's why we say that she's one of the heroes. At that moment, let's go back a little bit earlier that day. Moshe is born 3 months before. His mother holds him, his mother kisses him, his mother cries, and his mother has to let go of him. 3 days later, she lets go, and I assume he's grabbed out of her hands, and she stays home, and she's there crying, and that's it. This is the worst day of her life. But his sister can't turn around and can't walk away, and she's there watching this. And then something happens which is completely, completely unpredictable. that the daughter of Paro, of all people, stretches out her hand, Moshe is pulled in from the water, Moshe is saved, and of all people who should save. So Paro says to kill, and the daughter says to save. Later on, what are we going to find out? We're going to find out in Divrei Hayamim that this daughter, whose name is Bithya, will leave Egypt together with the Jews. She will marry a Jew. She will leave with the Jews. This may be the motivation why Chazal claimed that Hagar is Bat Paro. Because, again, you want a further microcosm of the leaving of Egypt. When Avram and Sarah go down, Avram says, oh, that's my sister, because he's afraid he'll be killed. The males be killed and the women be taken. The woman was took. She gets taken to Paro's house, and then he gets struck with plagues. Then you have the Makot. And then what happens? Then they leave with great wealth, with Rechush Gadol. So the whole story of the going down to Egypt, the slavery of Egypt, the leaving of Egypt, it's all right there, but who leaves with them? This Hagar leaves with them. So Chazal say, oh, that's Bat Paro. Where do they get that from? It's Bat Paro. Because Bat Paro herself really does leave later on. So if Bat Paro left later on, so you want Bat Paro to be part of the earlier telling of the same story, and that's why they make this assumption that Hagar was also Bat Paro. But this Bat Paro becomes the hero of the story. So, I mean, both of Moshe's mothers do things which are interesting. I say two mothers, I have to be careful with the Americans because they may not understand what I'm saying. But Moshe's two mothers, his biological and the woman who raises him, they both have something to contribute in terms of who Moshe becomes. But let's just pause there for a second. So his real mother was convinced she would never see him again. And later on the same day, he's saved by Bat Paro, right? The daughter of the one who said to kill him saves him, hands him back to his sister who's standing there, and is told, go find his mother. It says that. Go find his mother. I'm going to pay his mother to go nurse him. Now, if you can't understand that, you know, you talk about this Itchalto de Geula, or the whole redemption in one verse, it's right there. That in one moment you lost the thing which is most valuable to you, and there was no hope whatsoever. And the next moment he's handed back to you, and I'm going to pay you to do the thing that you want to do more than anything else in the world, and that is to hold your son again and to nurse your son. So if you can see the signs of the gula, of the redemption, right there in this microcosm, then I don't know, you need to change your glasses. I mean, it's just, they're staring at you. That's what this section is telling us. But who's the hero, the first hero? It's Moshe's sister. Why? Because it says, Vatitatsev achoto merachok. Lidea mayaselo, and especially if the Nitziv was right that Lidea does have this aspect of love to it, because she's concerned and there's this love for her brother, and she can't just turn around and walk away. But notice the terrible contrast when you look at 17. V'yimatzeu ish b'nei Torah b'sadeh. So of course, what is this? This is Yosef looking for his brothers. So over here, the stranger says, what is it that you want? So Yosef, for his part, wants his brothers. Tell me where they are. If we'll skip a little bit, you also have to wonder if Datan and Aviram are somehow connected to Dotan. Go back and look at his sister. But to save Otomi Rachok. Over here, his brothers see him from afar. Yosef, for his part, etochayen ochim vakesh. He wants his brothers. His brothers, for their part, who see him from afar, they want him dead. Here you have the exact opposite of the scene where Yosef's brothers see him from afar versus Moshe's sister seeing him from afar. But let me go one step further. When Moshe then is brought back to his mother, and his mother now has him for I don't know how many years, where she nurses him till she'll have to return him back to Paro. So what does she tell him during those years? What does she teach him? So I assume that she had a tzen of arena. She probably taught him tzervo. What else does she teach him? What does she say to him? So I would assume she tells him, you are a Jew. I assume she tells him there was a thing called a Brit Bein Abtarim. I don't know how you tell this to a one-year-old or a two-year-old. I assume she tells him that God has chosen you and it's putting you in the palace because you're going to have a very special role in this. You will have more power than any other Jew will. And that's why God has put you there. And she may even have added one more sentence and said, you're not the first Jew to spend time in the palace. You once had a great uncle, Yosef, who spent a lot of time in the palace, and he always remained a tzaddik. And there was a Yosef who was a tzaddik, and you need to be like your uncle Yosef. And it's interesting that when the Jews leave, they all go looking for the money before they leave. So the Midrash says, but yeah, all the Jews look for money except for one. And that was Moshe, who goes looking for Yosef. So maybe this connection between Moshe and Yosef was already instilled by his mother. I'm making all of this up. I hope you appreciate that. But it still resonates, because just think what it is that she said. Now, how do I know that his mother was successful? So that's source 18. Vayibay mimahem vayigdal Moshe vayetze el echav. He goes out to see his brothers, which means Yosef has a sense of brotherhood with the other Jew, Moshe. How does he know, how does Moshe know that these are his brothers? This is the lesson that his mother has given him. Here you see that his mother, here is where you see what his mother said to him, and here you see that his mother was successful in saying this to him, because somebody raised in the palace should see things through the lenses of royalty, of aristocracy. There are the upper class, and over here the upper class are gods. That's part of what his new mother did for him, declared him to be a god who the Nile gave birth to him. He's not a Jew who's thrown to the Nile. He was given birth by the Nile. This is even better than a virgin birth. The Nile gave birth to him. That's what she's claiming. Pharaoh was the god of the Nile. She's Bithya, the daughter of a god. He is a god. That's the claim that she's making. So Moshe is set for life. All that he has to do is be godlike and in Egyptian, and he's part of the whole mythology as well. How in the world is a man grown up in the palace who is told that he is a god, who's told that he's Egyptian, how does he walk out of the palace and see an Egyptian beating a Jew and not identify with the Egyptian? And not immediately say to himself, wow, what did that Jew do to deserve to get beaten? Because that's the way that any Egyptian would look at it. Well, he looked at you wrong, he spoke back a little bit, he didn't immediately do what you wanted him to do. It's not a sense of fairness. It's a sense of these are slaves and these are the bosses. So walking out of that palace, that's not what it says. And that's why this verse, I don't know how you could read this without saying, wow, look what Moshe's mother did. So you go back again to the beginning of Bereshit, you have the wrong punctuation. Hashomerachi anochi? Which really should be Hashomerachi Anochi. Who's the one who really ends up saying that? That's Yosef. Et Achayini Mevakesh. Who's the one who internalized the same value of Yosef? So now you see it's Moshe. Moshe is looking for his brothers. Vayar b'sivlotam. He sees their suffering. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me echav. So again, Cain kills Hevel because he has no sense that it's really his brother, because even though they're brothers, he has no sense of brotherhood. Moshe has a sense of brotherhood for every Jew, because these people that he sees here are not his biological brothers, but they're his brothers nonetheless. That's his attitude. These are my brothers. This is also a sign that the redemption can happen. If we can't treat ourselves as brothers, then how are we going to ever be one nation? So over here, Moshe has internalized the lesson of Yosef. His brothers look from afar and they want to kill him. He's looking for his brothers. Moshe's sister sees from afar. She wants to save him. She doesn't know how. It's an absurdity. It's a fantasy. She can't save him. How can she go and fight against all the Egyptians and save him? But miracles happen. Someone's got to win the lottery. Miracles happen. And then Moshe's mother, who a moment before was crying and mourning for her son who's dead, he comes back to life. He comes back to life from death. And now she gets to teach him. So what does she teach him when she has him back now? She teaches him, saying, wow, this is unbelievable. You're going to grow up in the palace. You have a role in this. You are the chosen one. So Moshe walks out. Why does he walk out? Because that's how he was raised. He walks out and he's the chosen one. He knows it. His mother told him. He has a Jewish mother as well. So he walks out and he sees the fighting. And then he sees an Egyptian beating a Jew from his brothers. That's what he was told. That's how he's been taught. V'yifen ko v'cho v'yar ki ein ish v'yachet ha-mitzri v'tmeinu b'chol. He sees there's no one there and he beats the Egyptian and he buries him in the sand. Of course, the deeper level of the pshat is that he killed the Egyptian. The deeper level is he also killed himself. He killed himself. The part of himself was an Egyptian. Moshe is no longer an Egyptian now. by virtue of siding with the Jews, he also killed a different Egyptian at that moment, and that second Egyptian that he killed was Moshe. Moshe now is clearly a Jew, but what happens next is very problematic, and that's what we need to understand. Vayetzi b'yom ha'sheni, because Moshe is now going to become a superhero. Moshe is going to walk out of the palace every day and try to do good deeds. He's going to look around and see and find the way that he can help. Vayetzi b'yom ha'sheni v'hineh shnei anashim ivrim nitzim. He finds two Jews fighting with one another. No, you can't fight with one another. Your job is to protect one another. That's why mother said, we're supposed to protect one another. That's how he's raised. I have to protect other Jews. How in the world are you fighting one another? Vayomer l'rasha, lama ta kareacha? And he says to one of them, you're wicked. How can you go beat another Jew? What is the matter with you? Vayomer mi samcha l'ish sar v'shofet aleinu? Who put you in charge? What's the answer? God. It's very interesting. Right, it's very interesting that according to Chazal, so who are these two? The Cheech and Chong of the Bible, and who's that? Dasan Vaviram. Datan Vaviram. Later on, if you look at source number 20, V'yikach Korach ben Yitzar ben Kahad ben Levi v'datan Vaviram, and what do they ask? They ask Moshe, who put you in charge? I mean, that's exactly the point. Also notice in Kaf Zayin, still in source 20, Vayalu me'al mishkan Korach datan Vaviram yisaviv v'datan Vaviram yotzu nitzavim petachol. What does nitzavim mean? They stand firm and they're not moving. They're in transient. They will not give in to Moshe. Now, just going back, because I want to make one or two more connections. These people say to Moshe, who put you in charge? Right? They say, who put you, not just in charge, who put you in charge of us? Do you remember that they said the exact same words to Yosef? Except, of course, they said it differently. In source 19, and the answer is yes. It's also interesting later on, what do we find in Parshat Yitro? What is Moshe doing all day? He's sitting as a judge. So, who put you in charge? Are you going to be a judge? So what's the answer? Yeah. What's the answer to Amshotim Shobanu? Yes. Which means these parallels over here between Moshe and Yosef, I hope that they jump out. But here's the problem. The problem is, going back to source 18, who put you in charge? Are you going to kill us the same way that you killed the Mitzri? Vayira Moshe. Moshe was frightened. Vayomer cheinu da davar. He said it's known. Vayishma paro et davar. How did Paro hear this? Who told Paro? There's only two people that knew it. That's Datan Vaviran. Which means not only are they willing to be there and help Moshe and help within this whole beginning of the process, the redemption, they actually, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, they put like a stick in the wheel and they slow down the redemption by 40 years. Because they tell it, Moshe runs away. And Moshe, instead of being this do-gooder who's going to walk out of the palace and looking to help his brothers, Moshe runs away. And one of the reasons Moshe runs away is not just because he's personally in danger, is because he has this intuition that the Jews are just simply not ready to be saved. The Jews are not interested to be saved. The Jews don't have this sense of brotherhood that he was raised with, which, of course, you have to appreciate how sad this is, because they're the ones who were raised together. He's the one who's outside of the community. He's the one who's been sitting in the palace, but he has the sense of brotherhood. And I'll say it again. This parallel between Yosef, the one in the palace who senses the brotherhood, versus the brothers who are all this one group together who don't have the sense of brotherhood. So now we see these things coming over and happening again. One of the things, again, which happens in as I said, in source 20 is that they refuse to come up. In source 21 is Moshe in front of the snare. And this tension between Elohim versus Yudke Vavke is all over that source. At some point, God says in Pasuk Tet Zayin, bottom of the page, 3, Lech vasafted ziknei Yisrael v'marta lehem. Hashem Elokei Avotechem nira ilai Elokei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov lemor pekod pakadati etchem. That God will remember you. Of course, who was the one? That was that was Yosef who had said that right before he died in source 22. Pakod, the same words are used, and Moshe now gets the sense It's time to go. God tells him, the people who want you dead, the people who threatened you are now dead, Rashi writes. In 23, Ki meitu kol anashim mihem datan vaviram. Hold it, but they're not dead. So he uses the old, they lost their money trick, and therefore it's as if they're dead. Because he doesn't say just the one, he says all those who want you dead. It's in the plural. Ki meitu kol anashim. Look at the Nitziv in 25. And I have every reason to believe that Rabbi Soloveitchik was influenced by this Nitziv. I heard Rav Schechter say that the Rav hardly ever quoted the Nitziv. The Nitziv was his great-great-grandfather. His grandfather, Rav Chaim, married the Nitziv's granddaughter. So this was his grandfather. Great-great-grandfather was the Nitziv. And he said he hardly ever quotes him. I think it's true in terms of Lamdus. He hardly ever quotes him. But in terms of his commentary in Chumash, I'm pretty sure the Rav was quite conversant in the Emek Dover as he was in the Beis Halevi. I found all over the place that he quotes the two of them, whether he says them or named by not, but look at 25. Kimesu kol anashim. V'lomer kimes oso paro sheradaf achar. It doesn't say just that paro died. Kimet lo yurami paro klau. Truth is, Moshe wasn't, paro is not what bothered him. Shregam beloze hu shalech kashe elav. V'rei hu muftach b'nei Hashem ki ye'imach. That when it came to his mission towards Paro, he had nothing to worry about. God said, I'm with you. Avomianshi Yisrael sheyurodfav yura ma'od. Who was Moshe afraid of? He wasn't afraid of Paro. He grew up with Paro. He knows Paro. And this new Paro may have been his brother or half-brother or whatever. Paro is not what scares him. Isn't this... This is tragic. Who scares Moshe? It's the Jews, the ones who scare Moshe. Paro, I can deal with Paro. And God said, I'll help you with Paro. It's the Jews that he's not so... he's not so sure about. Moshe comes in 26 and he tells them that God said, Ki pakat Hashem, and they believe it. Source 27, V'achar bo Moshe v'aron v'yivol paro ko amar Hashem elokei Yisrael. So the phrase he uses is Hashem, Yud Kei Vavkei. So Paro says, Mi Hashem Asher, I never heard of that name, which may actually be true. He may never have heard of that name. But it doesn't really make a difference. He should have listened anyway. But then notice that afterwards, Paro is upset, and Paro says, okay, now we're going to increase your labor, and we're not going to give you straw. And then the Jews who are Moshe's afraid of, and that Moshe never believed they were ready to go, that's how we end this week's Parsha. V'yifku'u et Moshe v'et Aaron nitzavim likrotam. It's the same word which was used by Datan Aviram. And now there are these Jews who are standing up strong, and they're saying, why do you make so much trouble? What's the matter with you people? Let's leave us alone as we are. And again, you see, there are the Jews who are not ready to go. So let's just tie all of this up. As much as I wanted to leave Yosef behind, I couldn't do it. So I apologize for that. But the story of Yosef, of being fearing God, that's the kernel of the Geula. That's where it begins. Maybe even these women, Shifra and Pua, Miriam and Yocheved, maybe even they knew something. Maybe even they knew that after Yosef was strong and after Yosef refused and after Yosef feared God, he got punished. Slavery happened to him. He's thrown in prison. How could it be any worse? He's already a slave. Well, now you're a slave in prison. And his life got worse. And not only that, they didn't remember him. Yosef's not remembered. But what happens afterwards? Suddenly, he's brought in front of Paro. Suddenly, he becomes free. Suddenly, his wisdom is recognized. Suddenly, he becomes a man of dignity. Which means... It's not just the slavery of Yosef, which serves as foreshadowing the slavery of the Jews. It's the rapid redemption of Yosef, that one day you're deep in prison, and just like that, the next day you're free. That's part of this whole story of Geula. And we saw it here a couple of times. One moment, Moshe's mother mourned because her son is dead, or all but dead, and the very next moment, she's handed the same son and told, okay, now nurse him and I'll pay you for it, And parenthetically, teach him what it means to be a Jew and to care about other Jews, because that's going to be the beginning of the redemption. Which means that even though the start of Parshat Shemot is really sad, we have anti-Semitism and we have abuse and we have slavery and we have suffering, but there are various signs that were thrown at us along the way that not only is redemption possible, but Yeshua Tashem Keherafayim. Literally in the blink of an eye, a situation which looks impossibly dire just like that turns around, and from where you thought there was death, there's life, where you thought there was no hope, there's hope, and where you saw slavery, suddenly we find redemption.